Good afternoon, you are tuned into Juno Afternoon, live and local on KTO and Karen and FM. I'm Jeff Brown, I'll be your host for today. Today we'll get to details about the anniversary of the Juno Raptor Center, with guests Janet Capito and Jamie Roundtree. We'll learn about the Alaska Women's Lobby Awards luncheon going this week. We'll also get a preview of the Wednesday night Mudrivers event, and we'll get an update on Eagle Crest with Jeffrey Clow and Brian Davies. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 10 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, sunny weather with high temperatures around 20 degrees. Forecast for Thursday night, mostly clear skies with low temperatures around 15 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Attorneys for the Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes say the legal battle has just begun against the Dakota Access Pipeline. This after a federal judge Tuesday rejected the tribe's request to stop the project. A preliminary injunction claimed the pipeline burdens tribal religious freedom by running under sacred waters in North Dakota. Attorneys say tribal leaders are disappointed by the ruling and have not decided on an appeal. Meanwhile, a motion before the court challenges the legality of the pipeline and includes claims that the Trump administration's actions circumvents law and ignores treaty rights. Shortly after taking office, President Trump moved to expedite the project. Jan Hosselman, Earth Justice attorney for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, says the Trump administration's issuance of the easement for the pipeline to cross Lake Oahe violates law.
Digging a 30-inch crude oil pipeline underneath a waterway that serves 17 million people. It is outrageous that this would not be the kind of thing that gets a full environmental impact statement.
Oil could flow in the pipeline as early as next week, according to construction updates provided to the court. Trump and builders of the pipeline say it creates jobs and aids in U.S. energy independence. As of Tuesday, no hearing had been scheduled on the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's motion. News reports, including by the Washington Post, indicate that the Trump administration's proposed cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency could total $2 billion, putting 3,000 people out of work. In Alaska, 18 Southeast tribes, which use EPA's Indian General Assistance Program, may see cuts in funding as a result. President Trump's proposal, intended to boost the defense budget, would slash the program's funding by 29%, down from $65 million. According to an EPA press release, Region 10, which includes Alaska, received $32 million for the program in 2016. Those funds go toward tribal projects such as stream restoration, solid waste disposal, and ocean acidification. Heidelberg Cooperative Association environmental coordinator Anthony Christensen says about four jobs within his tribe could be directly impacted by such cuts. Christensen, who's also in charge of obtaining additional grants for the tribe, says 10 to 15 seasonal jobs could also be lost.
That's my job. So you take me out of the equation. That puts us in a tough position because I'm core to six other grants through the capacity building, and I'm unable to do that, and the domino effect starts.
Changes in Trump's budget still could be made. The EPA declined to comment for this story. The St. Regis Mohawk tribe has started a company to offer high-speed internet to all residents on its territory. And now it's growing to provide broadband to neighboring areas in upstate New York. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
Until a couple of years ago, the Akwesasne Mohawks in northern New York were stuck with dial-up to access the internet. That changed when the tribally owned Mohawk Networks ran fiber throughout the reservation. But Chief Ron LaFrance says many neighboring areas remained without broadband, and the tribe saw an opportunity.
In this day and age, there should be no community that should not have access to a high-speed internet, better phone system. So it just made sense for us to expand out into the surrounding communities.
Mohawk Networks decided to use Wi-Fi signals from towers to reach these areas instead of fiber because it's a cheaper alternative. The company recently won a $6 million state grant to help serve more than 3,500 homes in nearby Lewis County. The tribe says another county is interested in signing on as well. High-speed packages start at $45 a month. Mohawk chiefs say they hope profits from the service will eventually rival casino revenues to bolster the tribal economy. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea. Thank you, President Obama, for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument, protecting ancestral lands, ensuring our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Learn more at protectbearsears.org. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to a June afternoon here on KTO with Aaron. And our first guest in the studio are here to talk about the Raptor Center's annual 30th anniversary. Jamie Rowntree and Joanne Flora, thank you for being in the studio with me today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So the obvious question is, you're celebrating 30 years of the Raptor Center. How did it all start?
Wow. Well, it all started back in 1987 when a group of people who really love birds got together, and they felt that there was a need in Juneau for a group and a facility to take care of sick raptors or birds of prey. Now, we've graduated from that now. We will take any injured bird. So if you find anything from a hummingbird up to an eagle and everything in between, we will do our best to take care of it or get it to a facility that can take care of it properly. And in the beginning, we were actually located behind the old Southeast Vet location before they moved, and we have progressed. We had to move out of there pretty quickly after beginning in 1987, and we did a lot of work out of our garages and our homes. But 3 years ago, we grew up enough. We do have a clinic now where we do the medical rehab work. So, yeah, we're getting there.
What's usually the reason why a bird arrives in your doorstep?
A lot of failure to thrive, a bird that just isn't cutting it out in the wild. They aren't catching enough food, so people see them down, not going away from people that are walking or riding a bike or driving, and so they know something's obviously wrong. The bird isn't flying away, and they give us a call, and birds like that generally are pretty easy to capture. They just don't have the muscle anymore, the strength to get away from you. But we still get a lot of birds that got a lot of scavengers here in Southeast Alaska, different species that scavenge. And so they'll come up out of a ditch, and they don't know what a car is, so they'll smack into you as you're driving by. Birds that run into windows, obviously they can't see, don't know what glass is. They can't see it, so they run into it.
Little ones that fall out of the nest.
Yep.
People find them on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Babies that fledge for the first time, they can't fly. They got to learn to fly. Mom's got to finish the job. So a lot of people that will get a lot of ravens, backyards, noticeable because they are very talkative. People see them quickly. Give a call. Hey, I've got a raven in the backyard that won't fly away. What do I do?
And you have an education program as well.
Yes, we do. We've got different birds that we cannot release back into the wild. Obviously, that's our goal. We want to, if a bird comes in, fix it and get it back out to where it belongs. But sometimes you've got a bird that can't. Whatever the problem is, mental or physical, depending on what the injury was, we can't fix them so that they're back to 100%. And then you got to make a decision. Is it an animal that can live in captivity and be an education ambassador for their species, for your group? Or is that, you know, they don't have a personality that's going to withstand that type of human chaos? So we do have a handful of birds that are very good representatives. We will go to classrooms. We will go to other functions. So if somebody wants a program, all they've got to do is call the office phone, 586-8393, or send us an email at info@junoraptorcenter.org, spelled just like it sounds, real common spelling, and request programs. We're pretty easy to get a hold of. Now, what's different is if you have a bird emergency. In that case, you want to call our emergency pager, which one of us carries 24 hours a day. So if it's 3 in the morning, give us a little slack. We may not call you immediately, but we'll call you pretty quick. But then you'd call 790-5424. And obviously after the beep, just regular pager system, key in your number, and somebody will respond and try and fix the problem.
And all this contact information is on the Juno Raptor Center's website, so if you didn't write it down or you won't remember it, because I don't remember it all, you could go to JunoRaptorCenter.org or our Facebook page and get the pager number and the email address, so you can contact us.
About how many birds do you deal with each year?
Boy, a typical year, we go upwards of about 210 to 230 birds. Every year, of course, is different. The past 5 years, we have topped out less than 200. We average 160 to 180 birds in the over the last 5 years. So they're doing better on their own, I hope.
And you work with the Sitka Raptor Center as well?
Yes, we do. We've got a very good relationship with the Sitka Raptor Center as well as Bird TLC up in Anchorage. Anytime you've got a question or you have a problem, we all communicate with each other. We also will help facilitate the outlying Southeast communities. If they've called Sitka and they're trying to send them a bird, we'll facilitate picking them up off of one of the smaller airlines and getting them on to Alaska Airlines in order to get them over to Sitka. So, yeah, you can't do it all yourself. You need a little help, and there are some very good facilities.
The nice thing about the Sitka Raptor Center is they have actual paid staff on the premises, and they have medical care readily available. Jamie mentioned the flight muse. Sometimes you have a bird with an injury, and it can't fly, but it can learn to fly again and rehab itself, and you need something that kind of looks like a bird airplane hangar, you know, something long so a bird can take off and go somewhere. They have those kinds of facilities there, as well as more education programs. So when it's something that is bigger than what we can handle here, they're a great resource so we can continue to, you know, help the bird, help hopefully get it back out into the wild, release it, or if in the case of some of the birds, we have to take them into our education program, which just means then you get to see them up close and learn about them, which is an advantage in and of itself because they can live reasonably long, healthy lives as flightless birds.
I think you get on a first-name basis with them.
Pretty much. If you've ever gone up to Mount Roberts and seen Lady Baltimore in the summertime, she's up there 5 months of the year. She's a great ambassador for programs like ours, and it's, believe it or not, it's probably one of the only opportunities many of our visitors ever get to see a bald eagle up close. Alaska has the largest population of bald eagles in the United States. And there are people who come here from all over the world who have never seen one except on TV. So now they get to get up nice and close. There's a docent there, a naturalist, who will tell them about the wild birds of the area, specifically about why this bird is here on display. And it's a tremendous educational experience.
And bald eagles stay in the coastal areas?
You know, not necessarily, but they can be very territorial. There will be resident eagles that will stay in an area and just kind of cruise that area. Some of them are a little bit more transitory, but you'll find them in a lot of other places, but not in the population numbers that we have up here. And because they return to the same nest every year, if they tend to be a little bit more migratory, maybe they want to go to Haines for the winter where they hear there's good fishing, they may come right back to Juneau in the spring. They mate for life, and they return to the same nest, which they keep adding to year after year after year. And so, you know, Juno's eagles, the ones you see here, are probably the same eagles you've been seeing here for a long time.
I'm talking with Jimmy Roundtree and Joanne Flora about the Raptor Center having its 30th anniversary, and the celebration is at the Menonal Mall because you don't have a physical location that people can come and see the animals.
Pretty much, and yeah, so that's going to be the 25th of March. Our annual meeting will start at 11 a.m. The public is welcome to attend that if you'd like. The open house will start at noon. We'll have cupcakes and things to drink, activities and door prizes. There will be some of our education birds there, so if you'd like to get up close and see one. And I'm sure you're going to be bringing Justice, of course, right?
Definitely.
The eagle that Jamie handles most of the time. And he's a lovely bird, very good around people, very calm. and Jamie knows more about him and eagles than probably any other single person I know. So it's a great opportunity for not only kids but adults to come in and learn more about the birds in this area.
I imagine it gets kind of emotional to release the bird after you've had them for a while.
That would be so cool. It really does. You
don't want to keep them.
Yeah, obviously. But animals, any animal, most species are smarter than we as humans give them credit for, because we don't think or operate the way they do. They're adaptable. So when you get one of these animals in, and especially, the ravens, one of the smartest birds you'll ever run into, smarter than most people I know, the eagles with their physical abilities and the power that they've got in their feet, there's a lot of respect for those birds. And when you do get one in, it might have a problem that you've got to take care of it and give it medicine three times a day, once a day, twice a day. They do have personalities. You figure them out. They figure you out. And you do get to the point where it's time to release them. It is bittersweet. They are wonderful creatures, and yeah, you got them to the point, which is exactly what your purpose is to release them, but a little piece of you goes with them, that's for sure.
Do you use volunteers?
Definitely. Joanne mentioned Sitka, and they are over in Sitka, a paid staff. They've got a veterinarian on staff. Here in Juneau, we are almost completely volunteer. During the summer months, we do hire naturalists, generally two, sometimes three, for our Lady Baltimore's educational facility up on top of Mount Roberts. And that is something that we are currently actively recruiting for. But the rest of us are volunteers. And kind of a little side note, if you go to JunoRaptorCenter.org, if you're interested in being a naturalist for the summer, you'll get more information on our website, or you can call the office and leave a message, and we'll get back to you about that that job position.
It's a great job. If you like wildlife and you like being outdoors and you like being on the mountain, it's a really nice way to spend your summer hanging out with a bald eagle and visiting with people from all over the world on a mountain 1,800 feet up. I mean, it's not a bad way to spend your summer.
Yeah, all the people that come here on the ships, you're looking at Juneau through their eyes. We've lived here. I was born and raised here, and, so it's just all home to me. But you then look at it through somebody who's coming here who spent, years working to get enough money, and looking at our home through their eyes, it just really opens up your mind to such a wonderful place that we live. And you'll get to talk to those people. They've got stories. They're funny. It's just such a fun job.
And they love the wildlife. They love it when they see birds. When you're up on the mountain, not only do you have the education eagle in her mew, but you'll have other eagles circling around up there and ravens going by, and it's really quite an experience.
I'll say. Well, I've been talking to Joanne Flora and Jamie Roundtree about the 30th anniversary of the Raptor Center.
Yes, please come out.
What do they call it, the Juneau Raptor Center?
Yep, Juneau Raptor Center. Please come out, bring the kids. We've got lots of activities for them on the 25th of March. It's going to be at Mendenhall Mall, and we're going to be in the space where We Fishy previously had
bird food.
yes, bird food, fish food, dog food. But that's the space that we're going to be in the Mendenhall Mall. So come see us. It's our 30th anniversary. There's going to be cake. So, how much more fun can you have than that? Animals and cake.
I just want to also mention, too, if you've ever been thinking about joining the Juneau Raptor Center, becoming a member, you can talk to us and do it on the spot there. And we're also recruiting for new board members. So if anybody has a particular interest in wildlife in this area and would like to talk about joining the board, this is also a good opportunity to do that.
And you don't have to love birds. If you want to, you've got other skills. You don't have to handle birds, clean up after birds. You can do other things.
All right. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Past the hour, you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guests are Nancy Corton and Lorraine Jones here to talk about the Alaska Women's Lobby luncheon, which is coming up
on Sunday.
Sunday,
yeah,
right around the corner.
Right around the corner is right.
Well, thanks for coming by the station today.
Thanks for having us.
What's the Alaska Women's Lobby?
The Alaska Women's Lobby is a statewide fundraising organization, and we support all efforts in the capital on support of women, children, and families in Alaska. So we raise funds to be able to have a lobbyist in the Capitol speaking on behalf of those issues.
Give them a mission statement.
We do have a mission statement. I believe it says, committed to defending and advancing the rights and needs of women, children, and families since 1981. So we've been doing this for a long time, and we hope to get support and keep it going.
And you have some awards you're going to be giving out.
We do. We're having a luncheon on Sunday, and it's going to be out at the university. Doors open at 11:30 for the silent auction, and we'll start eating around noon and have a program where we're going to honor three different people. The first one would be Valerie Davidson, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, and Carrie Robinson, who now works with the Alaska Institute for Justice. And the third person is Eric Vang, and he runs Alaska Legal Services. He works for Alaska Legal Services and runs the Legal Services Night at AWARE. So all people who have been involved in issues around women and health and such things for many years.
About how many people are involved?
With
the Alaska Women's Lobby.
Statewide, how many are we?
Well, we have a small contingency here in Juneau, but we have a really large contingency in Fairbanks, and they have a huge fundraiser that's coming up in April. It's called the Fabulous Feminist Fundraiser. So they do a lot of effort up there in raising money for the effort to support our lobbying efforts in the capital city. So, and this is our second annual Carla Timpone Activism Awards lunch, and we recognize this. We had this lunch in recognition of Carla Timpone, who was an advocate for children and families in Juneau many years ago, and had unfortunately passed away from cancer in 2004. So we give these awardees, or we honor them in Carla's name, and just keeping to support women and children in Alaska.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit of the reason why these people were selected for this year's awards?
Yes, we actually choose them based upon our five areas that we cover, and that is economic justice, health, education, civil liberties, and public safety. So we come up with a list of names and kind of talk it out and figure out who we feel has been giving their most efforts in those areas, and that's how we've come up with our three honorees this year. Last year, Lorraine, we honored...
Last year we honored Nancy Barnes, Walter Majoris, and...
M.K. McNaughton.
M.K. McNaughton, yes.
Who are all people who have worked so diligently in supporting children's efforts, Native efforts, women's efforts, And just those folks that are, that is their, that is what they do, is work in human services, and that's what we want to honor and give credit to.
And the luncheon is coming up on Sunday, the 12th of March. It starts at 11:30 with a silent auction. Do you know some of the items that are going to be auctioned off?
I've got three different dinners at either your house or two of them. The dinner will be delivered, and one of them is at my house. So, and that is a gourmet dinner for four, which usually garners a pretty high price. We have some delicious wines that we import from France every year, and it'll be a fun dinner. Usually goes for around $350. So,
do you take credit cards?
Yes.
Yes, we do. And the tickets for this event are $50, and you can go to akwomenslobby@gmail.com to reserve your seats, or you can come to the door and pay at the door. So it's easy. Come and just enjoy a wonderful afternoon out at the university. The Lakeside Grill has an awesome view of Auk Lake. It'll be a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and we will have a really great time celebrating these three folks that have done so much for Alaskan women, children, and families.
All right. I've been talking to Nancy Courtney and Larry Jones about the Alaska Women's Lobby lunch, which is just coming up on Sunday. Anything you'd like to add?
No, just that these are three wonderful folks that we're getting ready to honor, and all of them have been involved in women's issues for a long time, and hoped everybody would like to come.
And if the people need more information or would like to buy tickets, how do they do that?
To buy tickets, just email us at akwomenslobby@gmail.com or reach out to one of the Women's Lobby members. We've got Lorraine Jones, Lori Morton, Jordan Nigro, Sam Weinstein, Nancy Courtney,
Jane Andreen.
So if you know any of those folks, get tickets from them or come pay at the door, and we'll be welcoming you for this great event.
Appreciate you coming down today. Yeah.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
And here is the writer's almanac for Wednesday. It's the 8th of March, 2017. It was on this date in 1618 the German astronomer Johannes Kepler discovered his third law of planetary motion, that the square of a planet's orbital period is directly proportional to the cube of its average distance from the sun, and the ratio is almost exactly the same for every planet in our solar system. It's the birthday of the novelist Geoffrey Eugenides, born in Detroit, 1960, spent a year in Calcutta volunteering with Mother Teresa, thought about becoming a monk, and then decided to be a writer instead because, he said, it seemed to promise maximum alertness to life. It seemed holy to me and religious. His first novel was The Virgin Suicides, 1993, about the lives of the teenaged Lisbon sisters who all commit suicide. The Virgin Suicides, now considered one of the most shoplifted books in the world. It's the birthday of the critic Leslie Fiedler, born in Newark, New Jersey, 1917, author of a groundbreaking literary essay published in 1948 called Come Back to the Raft Again, Huck Honey. Leslie Fiedler, who coined the phrase postmodernist literature. Leslie Fiedler, who said, I long for the raised voice, the howl of rage or love. It was on this day in 1855, a train passed over the first railway suspension bridge at Niagara Falls, 825 feet long, connecting Niagara Falls, Ontario, with Niagara Falls, New York. The building of the bridge started out with flying a kite across the Great Gorge, and the kite string then was used to haul a rope, and then succeeding heavier ropes until finally they could begin construction. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sharon, entitled Weather. There is weather on the day you were born, and weather on the day you die. There is the year of drought and the year of floods, when everything rises and swells, the year when winter will not stop falling, and the year when summer lightning burns the prairie, makes it disappear. There are the weather vanes, dizzy on top of farmhouses, hurricanes, curled like cats on a map of sky. There are cows under the tree outlined in flies. There is the weather that blows a stranger into town, and the weather that changes suddenly an argument, a sickness, a baby born too soon. Crops fail, and a field becomes a study in hunger. Storm clouds billow over the sea. Tornadoes appear like the drunk trunks of elephants. People talking about weather are people who don't know what to say, and yet the weather is what happens to all of us. The blizzard that makes our neighborhoods strange, the flood that carries away our plans. We're getting ready for the weather, or cleaning up after the weather, or enduring the weather. We are drenched in rain or sweat. We are looking for an umbrella, a second mitten. We are gathering wood to build a fire. A poem by Faith Sheeran, Weather, from her collection Orpheus Turning, published by the Broadkill River Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This station comes from Alaska Seaplanes, connecting Juneau with 11 communities throughout Southeast Alaska. Packages available for gold medal at flyalaskaseaplanes.com.
It's about 32 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to the Juneau Afternoon. Our next guests are here to talk about the Mudrooms presentation for tonight. Steve Suey from Mudrooms and Bruce Van Dusen from the Polaris House. Thank you for coming by today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Steve, why don't you give us a rundown of what...
Yeah, so tonight is the March Mudrooms. It's happening at 7 p.m. at the Northern Light United Church, which is on 400 West 11th Street in the Flats neighborhood. And the theme for tonight is Rude Awakenings. If you've never been to a Mudrooms event before, we feature seven speakers telling a seven-minute story based on a common theme, and the one I just mentioned, Rude Awakenings. We have seven speakers this evening. We have Laura Kurt, Tom Waldo, Jenny John, Marissa Capito, Houston Laws, excuse me, Paul DeSlover, and John Neary. And to attend Mudrooms, it's a suggested $7 cash donation at the door. And each of our Mudrooms we've had for the 5.5 seasons, we pass the money through to a nonprofit here in our community. We've passed through close to $73,000 over the Mudrooms run, which I said has been 5.5 years now, and we're on our sixth season. And I'm pleased to have my new friend with me today, Bruce Van Dusen, who is the executive director at Polaris House, who is the beneficiary for tonight's Mudrooms, the next two events we have for the 2 months, and last month as well. So I just thought I'd bring Bruce by and talk a little bit about the Polaris House and what they do here in the community.
Sounds good.
Great. Thank you very much. It's good to be here with you guys today and to everyone listening. And thanks for this opportunity to be a beneficiary of Mudrooms. This is a good thing for us, you know, raising funds that we can use to help people and citizens in Juneau. Polaris House is dedicated to the recovery of adults who are living with serious and persistent mental illness. And what we do is focus on four main areas. First, we focus on housing, and we make sure that every Polaris House member is housed. And we want safe, affordable, quality housing, you know, housing that can turn into a home and be something to be proud of. We do have a couple of members right now who are we're struggling to find housing, but we'll continue to work with them and make sure that they can get that. We also focus on education. We assist our members to access normal community type supports for education, whether that's GED classes, the Computer Learning Center, the University of Alaska Southeast, or any of the other types of programs that are going on in the community for various education needs. Then we also focus on employment. For us, employment is a big one. This is really the ultimate goal, to have people reintegrate into the community through employment. Research over the years has shown us that employment is the greatest single therapy for someone who's living with a mental illness. It provides a lot of things. I mean, not only just the extra money, but self-esteem, self-confidence, a sense of belonging to the community and being able to participate in a normal and productive way. So that's really exciting to see someone get that. And we've had so many members over the last couple of years who've decided to go back to work and are employed. Then what we have is an area that we call supports and services. Not all Polaris House members are interested in paid employment today, but they do have other needs. Could be help with a housing application or a food stamp application or paperwork for Social Security. Could be, trying to find something in the community that's a resource that they need. So we will work with that person on any of those issues.
So somebody's got a line on either housing or...
Yes, we have four full-time staff right now, three and then myself. I have one person who's what we call the employment lead. The employment program is his area, and he's going to handle, you know, working with community partners and working with Polaris House members and lining people up with the right jobs. Then we have Hazel. She works back in what we call the Wolf Unit, and she handles the housing and the culinary and education programs. We're also looking for another full-time staff to help her with that because it's handling all three areas is a lot of work, and she's very busy and works hard. Then we have Steve. Steve works up in the admin unit, and he handles things like payroll, checks, deposits, debit reports, and those kinds of things. And throughout all of that, how we engage members is to work with them side by side to do all of these things. So they come in and they work with us to operate the clubhouse as a business. And it's in that process that they gain the self-confidence and the self-esteem and the opportunity to get or be around people and engaged in meaningful activity and a chance to develop relationships with people and friendships. And
do you use volunteers?
Excuse me?
Do you use volunteers?
Well, no, we don't. We more rely on paid staff and the members to get the work done. Volunteers is not a bad thing. I mean, we actually have a board member who comes in once every 2 weeks and does some mentoring on resumes, you know, filling out job applications. So we have that. But we don't use a lot of volunteers or a strong volunteer program because we think and we've seen that that takes the work away from the club member. You know, the club member being able to come in and participate in that work is what really makes the process happen, you know. So members have a right to a safe place. Safety is our first priority. No violence, no drugs, no alcohol. Then we focus on a place where people belong. So when a Polaris House member comes in, they're with people who they have a lot in common with. People that they can relate to easily, and you know, there's no sense of boundaries, like I'm this kind of person, you're that kind of person. It's no, we're a community, and everyone who comes in belongs there. And they have the opportunity to meaningful work. We don't have someone sweep the floor in the dining area so that they can get a can of pop. We sweep the floor in the dining area because we want a clean floor. We want our place to be nice and, you know, take care of it. So the work that they do is really invested in the clubhouse. It's a clean place. It's a good place. Everything works. Members come in and really are invested in making it work. And then what we do too is a right to meaningful relationships. Since we're not a provider of clinical services or therapy or medication management or counseling, we can come in and become friends with the member. And through that process, they're able to develop social relationships that have meaning. And that can carry over into their personal life when they're at home, when they're on the bus, or attending a community event. So we really focus on their life. You know, it's very important to me how the member feels. If you feel bad about your life, then, you know, your quality of life is not good. So if we can help people feel better, that's part of a good quality life.
How do people contact you?
We're at Polaris House. We're at 434 West Willoughby Avenue. We're right across the street from Sandpiper and Driftwood Lodge. Our phone number is 780-6775. And so you can call us or stop by any time. We're set up so we can do tours at just about any time of the day for anyone. It only takes a couple minutes, you know, to come in and tell us who you are, and then we'll show you around and what we're doing.
Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Steve, you want to go over the nuts and bolts of tonight's show?
Yeah. Well, I could just say, you know, that one of the great things about the setup with mudrooms and the beneficiaries that get these donations is the beneficiaries, they're the people that are at the front door. And so those tonight, you'll see some Polaris House members as you come to mudrooms and give your $7 cash donation. I know that we've worked with a lot of groups throughout Juneau, nonprofits. And last event with Polaris House members, I got a number of compliments from people that attend mudrooms fairly frequently, that the reception that they received was one of the better ones they have received. So a great opportunity to meet community members and Polaris House members tonight as you enter and give your donation. And I think it's a real compliment to the work that they do at Polaris House in creating this community. And it's similar to what we're doing with mudrooms, and we've been doing for the last 6.5 years, is it's about the stories on stage and the people getting up and telling those personal experiences. But it's also about the community that's watching and listening and the community we're supporting at the same time through these events. So thanks to Bruce and his club.
Yeah, and our first Mudrooms event last month was fantastic. It was great to see so many people there, you know, coming together and participating and working together and having fun together. And it was really nice. It was very nice. Thank you.
Well, I suggest a word. Bring $7 to the exact change, or bring some ones with you.
That's
well,
right.
Actually, we'll make change. Yeah, we are prepared to make change.
That's helpful.
And we have cookies and coffee, and yeah, we got some good stuff going on.
The one person I did not mention tonight is our music part of the Mudrooms. Programming is music a little bit before the show and at intermission. And tonight's musician is Taylor Vidic. So always great to see her on stage. We'll look forward to seeing her tonight at Mudrooms. It starts at 7 p.m. sharp. Definitely be on time. And we promise that it's going to be nice and warm there at the Northern Light United Church.
Great. And just a word of thanks to the Rookery, who helps provide the cookies for the event, and to Copa, who helps provide the coffee for the event. They do great. And, hot coffee and a cookie, fresh baked cookie. They just got done making them, so it's a good deal.
Stephen, Bruce, thanks for coming by
great.
Today.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Every March, a vast, glittering blue wave sweeps northward across the North American continent. This natural wonder is not a massive storm rushing forth from the tropics. It's the annual spring migration of tree swallows. Millions of tree swallows. The swallows spend the winter along the Caribbean, in Central America, and in the warmest parts of South Texas and California. By March, they're on the move. Some will nest as far north as there are trees in northern Alaska and Canada. Tree swallows rank among the earliest northbound migrants. Most swallows eat only flying insects, but the early arrivers in the north may be aided by their ability to subsist on berries during cold spells. But something else motivates the tree swallows' northward push against the cold edge of winter. Their choice of nest sites. They nest only in cavities, such as old woodpecker holes or man-made nest boxes. The supply of such specialized nest sites is limited, and competition is intense. So in this case, the early bird gets the nest. Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for spring planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
So 45 minutes past the hour, and you're attending to Juneau Afternoon, live and local here on KTO and Karen N. Next in the studio, we have a couple of people from Eagle Crest, Jeff McLeod and Brian Davies. Thank you so much for coming down the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having us this afternoon, Jeff.
So what's going on in Eagle Crest this time of year?
Oh, this time of year, it's a busy time up there, and I encourage everyone to go to skijuneau.com. We've got our season passes on sale at our spring rates, which are our best rates of the entire season. So if you haven't gotten a season pass yet, you can get your season pass at a reduced rate and enjoy some great skiing and riding through the rest of the season. This weekend on Saturday, March 11th, we've got the Sourdough Open Rail Jam on Sourdough from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And you can find out more information on that at Ski Juneau. We've also got a town dual slalom on Sunday. So pre-registration is 9 to 10, and then the race starts at 11. So kind of a busy weekend. And then as we're looking forward, Jeff, we are open for the holidays, for the spring break holidays. We're open daily March 16th through March 27th. And the snow bus operates March 18th through March 26th. So we just want to start getting that word out.
When does the cake toss happen?
The cake toss. You know, yeah, it's funny. Brian and I were just talking, and the brewery is interested in doing an event up there. I don't know if it'll include a cake toss, but I'll keep you posted on that, Jeff.
Thanks. Brian Davies, you want to talk about safety?
Yep. I just want to mention one more thing about the dual slalom. This dual slalom is open to all public. Just need to sign up. You can pre-register by getting a form by going to JuneauSkiClub.com, and there's a form available there, so you can pre-register or register on site 9 to 10, as Jeffer said, on Sunday. And this is open to everybody, so it's kind of head-to-head competition. Come out and race your buddies. So, mountain safety, yes. Last weekend provided some excitement for us just outside our scary boundary. So we just want to remind folks that if they make that responsible choice to go outside the boundary, that they need to be thinking and be prepared. We do have a checklist on our website. Does come with a lot of responsibility, not just about yourself, but who's around you too. Since there's so many people seem to be venturing out, you may be making the good decision for yourself, but somebody coming behind you might not be.
What are some of the items on the checklist?
Knowing what the snow has done and what it's going to do given the weather. Having the proper safety equipment, having a beacon shovel or a probe, the knowledge to use those in an appropriate manner in an emergency, having a partner that also has the same equipment at the minimum, and you guys have a good plan if something does go wrong. People know what to do. Having a plan on somebody knows where you're going. And then always paying attention to what the weather's been doing now, and may do even an hour from now.
What do you do when you first hear of an avalanche trapping some skier?
If we can identify the last point seen, we want to know the last point seen. We want to see if we can see the area. We want to scan the surface to see if they popped out, which would be great. If they don't, we want to mark that last point seen, and then we're going to institute a search. Now, if this is something that's out of bounds, we don't have responsibility out of bounds, so we go out if we have enough resources to cover the ski area for the paying guests there, and then we go out underneath under the jurisdiction of the Alaska State Troopers. We basically ask their permission to go, and then we become their responsibility as an asset, along with Sea Dogs and Juneau Mountain Rescue are generally called up. It also involves, like last weekend, Capital City Fire Rescue and Temsco Helicopters was called by the troopers. So there's a lot of resources standing by to implement a rescue.
Happy ending, nonetheless.
Yes, sir. Happy ending.
I think it's one of the things, Jeff, it's important for folks to realize that there's a big difference on one side of our boundary to another side of the boundary. Brian and his staff do a great job of controlling the mountain inside the boundaries, making sure it's safe for all of our paying guests, doing avalanche control work, closing appropriate runs when they need to be closed. But that doesn't happen outside that boundary where that avalanche occurred last weekend.
Yeah. Inside the boundary, we're manipulating the snowpack, so to speak. We use explosives and ski cuts and stuff like that to make lots and lots of small avalanches so we don't get a large buildup. We're always monitoring what the weather is doing to the snowpack, which is an important facet to think about. So, you know, three basic things we do is compaction. We get people on the slope. So we concentrate that. That helps change the dynamics of what's going on in the snowpack. Or we do control work where we have, like I said, explosives and ski cuts and traffic going on it. And then the third thing is we just close it. We don't go on it. It's either too dangerous for us to get on it, or the weather is such that as fast as we could control it, the hazard is going to rebuild. So
gravity will do its job.
Gravity will do its job, and sometimes that's the best thing. Sometimes we'll have early wet snow. We might just sit on it because if we get people in there, it just trashes it and freezes, and then it actually makes it an unskiable surface or not a pleasant surface to ski on.
But for the most part, it's a fun activity.
It is a fun activity, and March is a great time up at Eagle Crest. And one other thing I forgot to mention is March also brings what we call Black Bear Fridays. So on four Fridays in March, the Black Bear Chair operates. It normally only operates weekends and holidays, but for the rest of this month, on Fridays, it'll operate March 10th, March 17th, and March 24th. So there's some great skiing and riding to be had up at Eagle Crest in March, and you can find out so much information at skiduna.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
Sounds like it's pretty easy to get a hold of you.
Yep, it's pretty easy to get a hold of us with these long days, and especially with the sunshine. You know, it's great if you haven't learned how to ski or snowboard and that's been on your list of things to do this year, you still have plenty of time. If you didn't buy a season pass and you're thinking, oh, man, I want to get up there and ski, you can buy a spring season pass and you only have to ski or snowboard 4 days and you pay it off. So, you know, there's really no reason to get out up on the mountain. It's still winter up there and we've got plenty of winter to go.
All right, Jeff and Brian, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Sarah Raster from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is Girl Scouts of Juneau. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17YOK@JunoPolice.com. Together, we make Juneau a better place to live.
It's about 3 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into June Afternoon Live and Local. Forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures around 10 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, sunny weather with high temperatures in the 20s. Thursday night, mostly clear skies with low temperatures around 15 degrees. Friday, sunny weather continuing with high temperatures in the mid-20s. Tomorrow on June Afternoon, Joan Parris will be your host. Margie Thompson will be here to highlight the state's Zoom program. We'll learn about the Audubon Society's upcoming presentation, Alaskan Big Year. Heather Mitchell will be here to update us on Juneau Cabaret events. We'll talk with Skagway's Jeff Brady about art scholarship opportunity, and Megan Garrison will be here with news during Arts Hub. That Writer's Almanac, Murdoch Music & More, today and Juneau Afternoon.